Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Each episode is a conversation with inspiring people who make wonderful contributions to our knowledge in these areas and spark curiosity and ideas to pursue. Join me, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
It's really easy to fall into the trap of continually going back to who you know and not thinking more broadly. And I think social media makes it really easy to do that scattergun approach to everybody. But at the end of the day, you still need to have a really clear understanding of who is your target market or your target audience. And it doesn't matter what kind of business or organization you run. The more narrow you can get that, the more successful you'll be in finding out a lot more information about them, but also targeting your communications and your marketing and your sales effectively.
Hi there, innovator. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I trust you enjoyed my most recent conversations also with Scott Perry of Creative on Purpose and with Azul Taronas of the Authors Writing Academy. I'm really excited today to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Mel Kettle, who's a communication and engagement coach. She's author of the book, The Social Association, and she's also host of the This Connected Life podcast. Mel is all about connection, communication, and collaboration. She's also a facilitator, a trainer, a speaker, as I said, an author and a mentor who provides practical advice that achieves results while also having fun. A quick promotional message from our sponsor, that's InnovaBiz, my business. We help coaches and consultants build professional credibility, engage their target audience, and connect with their ideal clients. Now, you need to be really clear about who your ideal client is, and to do that, have a look at our Marketing Master mini class because it will help you do that in less than 30 minutes. You'll gain absolute clarity on who your ideal client is and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. Access the Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible without even giving away your email. In our discussion, Mel talked to me about communicating with people so we connect with them and make them feel valued. She explained how to control technology so it doesn't control you, yet still get all the benefits it provides. And we also talked about saving time by repurposing your content and at the same time providing valuable information to your audience. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Mel Kettle. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from sunny Brisbane in Australia, Mel Kettle, who's a communication and engagement expert. She's the author of the book, The Social Association, and also hosts This Connected Life podcast. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Mel. It's a great privilege to have you as my guest.
Thanks so much, Jürgen. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Steph Clark, who was our guest on episode 223 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we get you on and have a conversation with you. So a big hello to Steph.
Oh, isn't she lovely?
Now, you work with leaders and teams to build more trusted organisations by creating stronger connections with people, which I really like. In your book, The Social Association, you point out that while social media and technology has opened up a whole lot of new channels to connect with people, the fundamental principles remain that people do business with people they know, like, and trust. and that building human connections and relationships remains the first thing we should be doing. So as a marketer that's passionate about making marketing more human, I'm really looking forward to digging more into that with you today. And understanding more about how you tackle that whole topic. But before we start talking about all things communication and engagement, tell us about your journey. So you started off in marketing in the days when social media wasn't around as such. So how did you navigate that journey from marketing in pre-social media to today?
That makes me feel so old. I love, I do a lot of speaking, and one of my favourite things to talk about is how when I started my career, there was internet, but we didn't use email, and we built our first website in probably the late 90s. And I talk about how when we used to create content, we didn't create content, we wrote a brochure, because that was our primary form of getting information to our target market and our stakeholders. So I guess, I started my career in the mid-90s as a conference organiser for a small business. And we ran a lot of conferences and other events for associations, mainly in the medical and legal and engineering spaces. And because we didn't really have a lot of access to technology then, everything was manual. So we'd write out publications and we'd just get them designed and we'd print them and we'd have an afternoon in the office where we stuffed envelopes and then took them to the post office to do this bulk post. And I'll never forget the first time we started to use an online registration system, the look of pure delight on our conference manager's face when she realised that she could automatically, or that the system automatically populated 50 registrations in the length of time it would normally take her to do one manually. So from there I moved to Brisbane in 2000 and I worked as the marketing manager for the Brisbane Festival, which was a big performing arts festival, or still is a big performing arts festival in Brisbane every year. And after doing that for a year, I decided that I needed a bit of a break. And so I had a few months off and then I worked for the state government in Brisbane again, heading up or managing communications programs for the Office of Fair Trading, Liquor Licensing, and a big internal project that the whole of government that would involve the whole of government. A few years after that, I decided that I didn't really enjoy working for other people anymore, and set out to work for myself. Not really thinking at the time that all of my clients became the other people I worked for, as opposed to the one boss that I'd had previously.
All right, and you mentioned earlier the writing of brochures and bulk mailing out brochures, and I guess the question that raises for me was, first of all, in those days, and I certainly wasn't in marketing, certainly not a business-to-consumer type marketing in those days, how did you kind of determine where to send those brochures too, and how does that relate today? Because I know one of the things you're really strong about is knowing where your audience are, or who your audience are and where they are, and how you communicate with them well.
Yeah, so that's a really good question and something I haven't thought about for a long time. It was definitely, you definitely had to do a lot more research to find out where your audience were. And because a lot of our clients were associations, associations are member-based organisations, and so those organisations had the contact details for all of their members. So we had a postal address, we had a phone number. Eventually, as time progressed, we started to collect email addresses for them as well. And now, you know, clever associations on their registration forms and renewal forms will also be asking for LinkedIn profile addresses and Instagram handles and Twitter handles, and starting to capture all that information in their database as well, so they can communicate more broadly with their members. But back then, we relied on our clients to be providing that information to us. And the other thing that we used to do a lot more of then, particularly for the larger conferences, was put articles about the conference in the industry magazines. And not just our clients' magazine that would go out to their members, but, you know, mass media industry magazines that were read by doctors and lawyers and engineers and our other client groups, depending on what the event was. We also did a lot of international conferences, and so we worked in partnership and in collaboration with the associations, sister organisations in other countries, and sometimes in other states if it was a federated association where each state was independent. And that really helped us to find out who we needed to be approaching and getting in touch with them. One thing I really noticed then is that people tended to collaborate a lot more and work together a lot more on conferences and events and programs that we ran than they do today. And I don't know why that changed or when that changed, but, you know, we just had this, there was a really lovely sense of partnership and collaboration with events.
Yeah, I'm interested in what you're saying there, that, you know, the marketing was very specifically targeted to magazines and associations and so on. Do you think that with the advent of social media and how we can now reach so many more people, that that's been forgotten, that you still have to actually target the audience that cares?
Yeah, I think it has in some cases. I had a conversation with a man this morning who's on the board of a small association, and he said to me, there's 300,000 people in Australia who do the work that we target through our association, but we only have 300 members. And I just looked at him and said, well, how are you going out to reach these potential members? Because I think they're just... it's really easy to fall into the trap of continually going back to who you know and not thinking more broadly. And I think social media makes it really easy to do that scattergun approach to everybody. But at the end of the day, you still need to have a really clear understanding of who is your target market or your target audience. And it doesn't matter what kind of business or organisation you run. The more narrow you can get that, the more successful you'll be in finding out a lot more information about them, but also targeting your communications and your marketing and your sales effectively. And I think it's really easy to say, yeah, I'm targeting all women in Brisbane, or I'm targeting all lawyers, or I'm targeting all whatever that group might be. Once you narrow it down, then it's easier to do the research to determine who they are, what their preferences are, what their buying behaviours are, where they hang out, what social media platforms they use, and so you can, and what their problems are. So you can be far more focused on the messaging that you send out to them and the channels that you use to send those messages, because you know more about them, and so you're more likely to get that right.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think maybe in the days of mailing out hard copy brochures, we all did that because there was a physical limitation to how much we could do. Also, there was a physical manifestation of the actual cost. With social media, we kind of forget that, because we think, wow, we can just send a shotgun out into the never never.
Oh, I remember a brochure that we did for one of our clients in the mid-90s. It cost $1.50 per brochure to print it and to post it. And this didn't include the development, you know, the cost of the people to design it and to come up with the content in the first place. This was just the hard cost of printing and postage was $1.50. And they had a mailing list of 8,000 people. And so that's a lot of money you know, design and to post and to print this brochure. And so we wanted to make sure that as many of those 8,000 addresses were correct. And so we spent a lot more time and energy in cleansing that database to make sure that we were sending it to the right people at the right place and at the right time. And I think electronic communications, either through email marketing or social media marketing or other forms of online marketing, seem really easy and seem really cheap, but if you aren't hitting your target, then you actually aren't communicating. And I think people forget that communication isn't sending information out. Communication doesn't happen until the content that you've sent has been received and actioned on and actioned. And the action might be for a brochure, for example, to put it in the bin, but it's an action. Or from a social media perspective, it might be to read it and to comment, or it might be to buy something, or it might be to tell somebody about your product, or it might be, you know, whatever your call to action is. It's people all the time say, I'm communicating with you, but actually, no, you're not. Because if that message isn't resonating, then you may as well just shoot it off in the dark somewhere.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. And I read something the other day, and I can't recall what to attribute this to, which is interesting, but it struck a chord with me straight away, because the comment was, marketing at its heart is starting a conversation with someone who could be an ideal customer. So to me, that captures that whole thing about, you know, really knowing who your audience is and who could be an ideal customer, and then the idea of beginning a conversation with them, because it is all about building a relationship to get to that know, like, and trust point, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, a really good example is a mate of mine is the CEO of the Australian Boarding Schools Association. And as an association, they are held in quite high regard by their peers because they have 100% membership. Every single boarding school in Australia is a member of their association. And the reason they're a member, because it's voluntary, they don't have to be, but the reason they're a member is because Richard, the CEO, and his team know every single one of their members personally. They have a process in place where they meet with them all on a regular basis. They talk to them on the phone on a regular basis. They do everything within their power to make their members feel loved and valued. And so when it comes time to renewing, there's never a question, because the value that they're getting is really, really obvious, because they know that they can ring up any time and talk about a problem or a question. But it's not only when they've got a problem, they know that a certain number of times a year, the CEO and his team will reach out to them to have a conversation and to add value. It's not about asking for something, it's about giving value. And I think the more we can give value to our clients and our prospective clients, the more people are going to want to work with us, and the less it becomes about money.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a really great example. And what I like about that too is it's once those schools are members of the association, the sale, if you like, has already taken place, and yet the outstanding customer service and the relationship building is still ongoing.
Exactly. And compare that to a client of mine, another client, who last year I said to her, are you free for a coffee? And she said, no, I'm not. Over the next 2 weeks, I have to call our 600 members who haven't renewed. And I said, oh, two things. Why are you doing it? When she was the head of comms and marketing. And secondly, I said to her, how many times have you or somebody from your association spoken to them over the past 12 months for reasons that don't have to do with renewing or asking for money? And she said, none. And I thought, well, that is why you're now having to call 600 of your members, which was about 7% of their membership. Now, that is why you are having to call them to say, why haven't you renewed, or don't forget to renew? Because if you had demonstrated value by having regular contact points with them throughout the year, when you sent that renewal notice, it would be, there'd be no questions asked. It would be, here's my credit card. Thank you very much.
Hmm. That's right. No, probably looking for the time when the renewal is due to make sure that they don't let it expire by forgetting.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So what your area of expertise is communication and communication strategy. What are some of the strategies a business can put in place or an association can put in place to have this level of communication where, you know, there is regular communication, it's not connected to a sale or an issue with a product or a service, but it's just a regular ongoing nurturing of a relationship.
So my big thing is, how do we communicate so that we actually connect with people, and through connection we can drive engagement, productivity and profit. And it's not only how do we communicate with our external people, it's how do we communicate with our staff and our colleagues and our suppliers as well. Because if we communicate effectively with them so that they understand our purpose and feel valued, either working for us or doing business with us, then they'll act as advocates for us. So don't feel, as a business owner or as a leader in an organisation, that all of the communication has to come to you, because it doesn't. It's far more effective when you spread that load across your organisation, and sometimes that could be in a structured way and sometimes it can be in an unstructured way. But I think what a lot of organisations forget is that every single time a customer interacts with you or your brand, that's a communication touch point. So when they look at your website, you're communicating with them. When they look at you on social media and they either see you there or they don't see you there, or they're tweeting you or commenting on your LinkedIn post and you don't respond, then that's you not communicating effectively with them. And that sends a message. So what I say to my clients is that you need to have a really clear understanding of what communication is and whose responsibility it is. And the answer to the question of whose responsibility is it is every single person in your organisation is responsible to communicate with your customers and potential customers on some level. And then you need to have a strategy. And you need to understand in that strategy, you need to understand what's your purpose as an organisation, and how does your how do you communicate that out? But more importantly, you need to make sure that every single person in your organisation has a really clear understanding of what their purpose in the organisation is. And that should be the same. So I love the story of when John F. Kennedy went to NASA in the 60s and he came across a janitor, and he said to the janitor, "What do you do here?" And the janitor said, "My job is to help put a man on the moon." And I can absolutely guarantee that most people in most organisations would not have an understanding of their higher purpose in their job. And it's that higher purpose that fulfills you when you go to work each day, because you feel like you're working towards something that has meaning and purpose.
Yeah, that's a wonderful story. And I think I heard a similar one, but I just can't recall the details, where somebody was talking about cleaning the floors or cleaning the factory floor, but it was pointed out that they're actually part of building this new thing.
Exactly. And I think, so to answer your question, which I'm getting too slowly, I think that you need to be able to demonstrate your purpose, and then you need to be able to make sure that your staff and your suppliers and your customers understand what that is. The tactics that you employ to help them understand that, or to make sure they understand that, that differs. That depends on who are you trying to reach, what are the breakdowns of those messages that you want them to have, how can you demonstrate the value to them of what you're doing so that they choose you over a competitor. And where do you go to deliver that message? So obviously, if it's you're developing that message to staff, we know from research that the most trusted person in an organisation for any individual is their direct line manager one up. And so how do you make sure that you've got the right processes in place so that the right messages filter across your organisation, down if necessary, but ideally across? Quite a few people have come to me over the last few years and said, we've got an internal communication system such as Yammer or Facebook Workplace or our intranet, and nobody uses it. And nobody uses it because the senior leaders don't use it. Communication really needs to be led from the top, and everything you do as a CEO and in the senior leadership team, everything you do is looked at by everybody else in your organisation. So if you're not promoting your organisation on LinkedIn, if you're not talking to people on Facebook Workplace or on Yammer, if you don't have, if you're not if you don't show interest in people in your organisation when you see them, either getting a cup of coffee in the local cafe downstairs or in the lunchroom or as you walk past their desk, then they will get the message that they don't need to show interest in other people either. Which means when they are talking to your customers, they don't show interest because you don't have a culture of curiosity and interest.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. Is you know, I think something I read the other day which expresses this really well, and that's be the behaviour you want to see from others. And I think in terms of leading an organisation, that is very true.
Yeah. One of the things I say a lot is you can't be what you don't see. And I do a lot of work with people to help them understand how to control their technology. For example, how do you manage your phone so that you're not checking it every 30 seconds? What do you need to do so that you can control it and your behaviours around using a phone? And I talk to, like a lot of my friends are parents of young children or teenagers who say to me, how do I get my kid off the phone? And I say to them, well, how often are you using the phone at home? Because if they see you on the phone, you know, playing a game or on Facebook or scrolling through Instagram, then you're telling them that that behaviour is okay. And so you can't do that and then tell them off for doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's the same in the workplace. If you want to have a culture of gratitude, or if you want to have a culture of connection, or if you want to have a culture where everybody's kind and helpful, if the boss is a narcissistic pig, that's never going to happen. You're going to have a culture with narcissistic pigs because that's what they see
that's what you lead. Yeah, it's fascinating. I remember the days, and this is dating me a little bit too. I remember the days when BlackBerry was kind of all the rage, and all the salespeople in the organisation I was working for got their BlackBerries, and it was fabulous. They could kind of check their email in on the road because they spent a lot of their time on the road. And then after a short while, all you could hear from these people were complaints about, this BlackBerry, you know, it interrupts me all the time. I'm at home on a weekend with my family and I get these emails and I get interrupted.
Yeah.
And I could never understand how people didn't know that. You know, there must be a switch on that thing that, A, you can switch it off completely, or B, you can tell it, I don't want to be notified when an email comes in.
Yeah,
surprised me how, these BlackBerries are the death of me now.
I have to say, I absolutely loved my BlackBerry. I had one for years, and I was a very late adapter to an iPhone, and because I just loved my BlackBerry. But the thing that I hated about it was that little red light that blinked every time you got a message or an email. And it took me a week to work out how to turn off that red blinking light, to go through all of the apps that had it. And once I'd turned it off, my life just became so much more calm. It was phenomenal. And so now with my iPhone, there's very, very few things that pop up as a notification. I've turned off the push notifications on everything except a couple of messaging apps and my calendar. And the freedom and the peace that that gives me as a consequence is immense. And, you know, some of the work I'm doing at the moment with a couple of my clients is to help them increase their productivity or increase their engagement and productivity in the workplace through having stronger connections with each other. And if you're constantly on your phone, then how do you build a relationship with somebody else in a face-to-face human way when you're always on your phone? Because you're sending a message that my phone is more important than you. And that it's easier for me to email you even though you sit next to me, or it's easier for me to text you even though you sit 20 metres away from me, than it is for me to push my chair back, stand up and walk 20 metres. So how do we get that? How do we change our practices around technology so that we can disconnect from the phone and genuinely reconnect with the other humans we work with?
Yeah, I think that's one of the big traps that people fall into with this day and age of technology. And at the same time, of course, there's huge benefits from whether it's the phone or other forms of technology. I mean, we talked about social media, and the phone is very kind of key tool in that whole social media game.
Oh, absolutely it is. And I'm certainly not saying get rid of your phone, because love technology. But how do we can we need to work out as an individual and as individuals, we need to work out how we can control our phone so it doesn't control us. Because very, very clever people came up with smartphones, and very, very clever people created apps that have us continually picking up our phone to check them. And those people researched drug addicts and addiction and created apps based on the changes that happen in our brain when we use them. And those changes that happen in our brain when we have that repeat addictive behavior is the same as the changes that happen in our brain when we become addicted to a drug like tobacco or alcohol or heroin or crack cocaine. And so they're very smart people. So we need to be more smart and go, you don't trick me. I've got tactics to turn my phone off, to put it in flight mode, to keep it on silent, to get rid of the push notifications. And I've got places in my home and my office where I'm just not even going to use my phone. And that might be on the couch, it might be in the bedroom, it might be in a meeting, it might be between 9 and 11 in the morning when you know that's your most productive time for you to do some deep work. So as individuals, we need to create our own tech policies so that we have more control over this technology that is rapidly consuming us as a society.
And I think it comes back, whilst a lot of those gadgets are really useful for enabling communication with people, the genuine communication that connects you with people, as you talked about earlier, is actually not served by having them there as distractions while you are communicating with a person.
Exactly. And one of the things about connection, I was reading recently an article about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And anybody who's familiar with that model knows that the bottom of the triangle shows that our most basic needs are met when we have water, air, and shelter. Well, this research that I read, and I'll try and find the link to send it to you, it's very current, it only came out a couple of months ago, shows that there's a level below that. Our basic needs now are met when we have human connection. And we need that human connection and that touch in order to feel, you know, that's more important to us as a society and as individuals than food, shelter, and water. And we all know how important those three things are.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess in terms of being resourceful to get, even if it's those needs, the food, shelter, and water needs met, being in a position where we can ask others for help is going to get you so much leverage.
Absolutely. People inherently need to feel needed. And so when somebody asks you for help, think about how that makes you feel. It makes me feel valued, and it makes me feel important, and it makes me feel special, because somebody, especially if it's somebody who I know, love, and trust, has asked me if I can do something for them.
All right, well, let's come back to social media, because we talked a little bit earlier about communicating so we can connect with people. What are some of the ways that people can use social media in a good way to actually build those connections and build relationships?
I think you need to have a think, first of all, about who is it you're wanting to build relationships with, whether it's personal or professional, and then you need to think about where might those people be on social media. So for me, I'm trying to build business relationships and relationships with people who I might want to work with. And I know that the majority of the people who I'm wanting to have those relationships with are on LinkedIn. And so I've got a plan of how I can maximize my use of LinkedIn so that I can meet more people, connect with more people who are relevant and meaningful to me, not every single person, but, you know, my specific target market. And what is the content that I can create and share on LinkedIn that will provide them with value? So when you are creating content for social media, make sure it's not all sales focused. It needs to be of value. And I don't mean a value to you, I mean a value to the person who's reading it. So the more, again, this comes back to the more you know about your target market, the more you can understand what their problems and their pain points are, which makes you better equipped to be providing information and content that will resonate with them and that will help them. Because the more you can be useful and helpful to people, the more they're likely to remember you when they need the services you provide.
Yeah, there's three really good points there, I think. There's knowing who it is that you want to build that relationship, who it is you're talking to, and the more you know about them, the easier you're going to find what information will be of value to them and what you can talk to them about. Then where they are, and in social media that means, you know, are they on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever.
YouTube, Pinterest. There's a big list. But it's also...
Is Pinterest still a thing?
it is for a lot of businesses. It is for retail, and it is for food, and it is for businesses that have things that are very visual. Then Pinterest is definitely a thing. And if your target market is...
Because I haven't... I haven't been paying that much attention to Pinterest recently. It seems to have... it seems to have lost profile.
I think I've got some friends in the travel industry, and the majority of their leads to the majority of traffic to their website comes from Pinterest. Something like 70 to 75% of the traffic to their website comes from Pinterest, which is fascinating to me, because that is not at all where mine comes from. But we have very different businesses and very different target markets and very different business models. So I wouldn't expect them to come from the same place.
Yeah. Yeah, well, different audiences are in different places.
That's right. But the other thing, I think, too, when you have a clearer understanding of your customer, then you also know how they like to get information. So do they like to watch video? Do they like to read short form? Do they like to read long form? Do they like to listen through a podcast? Do they like visual content? Do they like to read infographics? So, again, the more you know about them, then the more that you can create content in that form that they like. So, for example, we know that people in their probably 30, 35 and younger love watching video. They don't only love watching video, they love creating video. So if you're an organisation that's trying to drive engagement with either staff of that age group or customers in that age group, then what can you do to encourage them to create video for you to engage with them? And that could be a competition, or it could be, you know, some other thing that you think about that will drive their engagement while tapping into something that they love to do. We also know that podcasting is on the rise, and that people are consuming more and more and more podcast content than ever before, partly because it's so accessible, but partly because there's so many great podcasts out there. So as an organisation, what can you do to create a podcast? Or if you don't want to create your own, then what can you do to make sure that your key people in your organisation are guests on other people's podcasts? And then when you've got that piece of podcast content or that piece of video content, what else can you do with it so that you're repurposing it and not just creating once and using once, but creating once, repurposing and using again and again and again and again, so that you're saving time and energy and resourcing?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of repurposing, and that's a very good way to save time and get content that's appropriate to the different forms of media. I was going to ask you, in terms of social media posting, whether you did a whole standalone campaign through whatever social media channel you're using, or whether you start off with, say, a blog post and then repurpose that through social media.
For me personally, so I podcast, and my podcast episodes become a blog post, a newsletter article, and social media posts. And the lazy way, and I must confess to having done it the lazy way recently, is to just put them all out at the same time. But I'm starting now to do the podcast, release the podcast episode, and then in time I'll release them on the different channels so that everybody's not seeing the same thing all at the same time. And again, you know, when I wrote my book, the way that I wrote that was to transcribe a webinar series that I'd done for an online group mentoring program a couple of months before the book was published. I'm currently writing my second book, which is going to the editors in less than a month. Oh my God, I'm going to be sick. Less than a month. And the content for that is coming from my podcast and from blogs that I've written and articles I've written for client magazines over the last, you know, 6 to 12 months. So I'm a really big believer in using one, in creating once, and then looking at how you can use it in multiple ways. And one of the, you know, sometimes you can use it. I've got some content that I wrote, I think I wrote a blog post on networking. I wrote a series of blog posts on networking about 8 or 9 years ago. And somebody came to me the other day and said, can you run a workshop for our members on how to network? They're not very good at our conference at talking to each other because they're all on their phone. And I said, yes, I can. And actually, here's an article on networking if you'd like it. And I just, you know, pulled it off from my files that I'd written 7 or 8 years ago and tweaked it and updated a little bit of it because there wasn't much social media in there. It was quite different. They needed an update. So it took me probably 20 minutes to refresh it, and then I sent it. And so things that you write, that if you create content that has no specific time frame around it, and we call it evergreen content, then you never know when you're going to have an opportunity to use that down the track.
Yeah, that's great advice. And it's always good. I mean, I love the Marcus Sheridan approach of, you know, whatever questions you get asked by your clients, that, and particularly if they're asked over and over again, to write about that is just exactly. So time efficient, because when you get asked that question, you say, well, it happens to be that I've written a blog post or I've spoken about it on a podcast episode, and here's the link.
Exactly. I spoke at the Clubs Queensland conference last year, and I spoke about social media and how clubs can use social media more effectively to engage with their members. And somebody said to me, I don't know what to post, I don't know what content to share. And so I said, what are the most common questions that you get asked every day? And he said, the number one question that we get through our switchboard every day is, what's the roast of the day today in the cafe? Yeah. And I said, well, if put that on your Facebook page, you know, every day, early in the morning or late the night before, when the roast of the day has been decided for the next day, put a post saying, tomorrow our roast of the day is this. And because that can become really boring after a while, maybe, you know, over time you can say, the roast of the day tomorrow is roast beef, and it's the 79th time that roast beef has been the roast of the day this year. Or you could say, the roast of the day today is pork, and our members and guests have eaten this many kilos of pork this year. Or, you know, our roast of the day is this, and with it we'll serve potatoes. And did you know that this is the kind of potato we use to make roast potatoes for these reasons? So there's heaps of things you can do to make it a seemingly boring post that you share again and again and again more interesting.
That's right. And it opens up a whole lot of possibilities as you start to
go off
on those tangents from what the core question is.
Exactly. But also the other benefit is once word gets around that you share what the roast of the day is on your Facebook page every single day, and you have to be consistent, the number of calls to your switchboard will decline, which means that they'll be freed up to do other things. And that's one of the benefits of social media. If you can systemize and automate and put processes in place to answer questions that you have all the time, then the people who normally answer those questions have greater capacity to do other more interesting work. And that makes them happy, and it means that you've got greater productivity with other activities that you need to have done.
Yeah. And also the possibility to have them doing actual higher value tasks as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Or, you know, if they're on the phone, maybe they can spend more time talking to your members when they call, because there's not five calls waiting for them to answer. So instead of having a 30-second conversation, maybe they can take some time and have a 60 or a 90-second conversation and actually ask a question of the person on the other end of the phone, the answers of which can give you valuable intel that you can use for other things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to have them spend their time to deepen those relationships.
Exactly.
Now, you mentioned something earlier that I just wanted to follow up on a little bit, and that's around commenting on social media posts and how a lot of people don't comment on social media posts that come into their company. What's your feeling about commenting on other people's posts, but also commenting on your own posts as you put things up?
So if people comment on your post and you don't respond, think about how you feel when you call somebody and leave a message and they don't get back to you.
Hmm.
You get that same sense of rejection when people don't respond to your comments on social media. Now, I'm not saying that you have to respond to every comment with, you know, a few sentences, but at least make sure you respond to every comment with a like, because that indicates an acknowledgement that you've seen their post, that you've seen their comment, and that you're appreciative of it. Obviously, when people are commenting on your social media with a question, asking to ask you a question or to give a more in-depth and thoughtful comment, then responding to that definitely makes people feel valued. And, you know, we know that people today make purchasing decisions based on the experience they have with the organization. And so the more you can make them feel valued, the more positive their experience is, and the more likely they are to come back and buy from you again.
Hmm. Okay. And one of the other ones I was interested in were social media reviews. How important are they?
I think they're important. The degree of importance, I think, depends a little bit on who they come from and where and when. People, again, it comes back to the experience. People also like to feel validated in their purchasing choice. And so if they can see positive social proof that other people love your product or your service or your brand, then people are more inclined to buy from that. Women in particular, there's been a lot of research around how women buy, and women in particular are more inclined to buy something from an organisation that's got social proof. And social proof can take the form of a ratings and review, a referral, a testimonial, a recommendation, and they can either be written or video. So if you're getting recommendations and testimonials and referrals, then make sure other people can see them. And you might want to, you know, showcase some of the big ones on the homepage of your website. You might want to do an occasional social media post highlighting a customer who said something positive about you. Or you might want to, you know, do a shout out to that person and thank them. So I definitely think that ratings and reviews and positive comments on social media are important, because it helps other people see that they're not the only person who values you.
Hmm. Yeah, and of course it's probably a good idea to respond to those public reviews as well.
Most definitely. And even if all you say is thank you, then because social media, Jay Baer, who's an American social media customer service expert, he says social media is a customer spectator sport. And what he means by that is that every single person can see what happens on social media. And so everybody's watching. And you don't know where those people are or where those eyes might be from. But people watch how you respond and how you engage on social media. Someone rang me earlier in the year and said, introduced herself and said, I followed you on Twitter for 8 years. I've never engaged with you. You don't follow me. So you won't know who I am. But I've been watching you for the last 8 years, and now I have an opportunity to hire you to do some work with us. And I just thought, eight years, that's crazy. But that just highlights my point that you never know who's looking and who's watching. And so the more you can demonstrate the more you can show your generosity and the more you can show your kindness and your empathy, and responding to people on social media shows all those things, then the more people are going to see that and like that.
Yeah, and of course, 8 years, that the other thing that, that raises is you have to be consistent.
You do. Yeah, you do.
So if you've been showing up for 8 years and sending the right messages all the time, then when the time was right, then the person decided you were the one to work with.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
All right, this has been really fascinating, Mel. I think it's a good time to move on to the buzz, however, and that's our innovation round designed to help our audience who are primarily leaders and innovators in their field with some tips from your experience. So I have five questions, and hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers that will inspire people to go and do something awesome today.
I hope so.
What do you think? What do you think the number one thing is that people need to do to be more innovative?
I think you need to be curious. I think you need to ask questions. You need to read widely, and when you meet people, you need to, you know, find out what makes them tick and ask and show an interest. And you never know, I never know where an idea can come from. And the more that I ask questions and the more that I read, then the more likely I am to have a great idea.
Yeah, that's great advice. Lots of curiosity in all of those tips there. Wonderful. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Have a holiday. I think I mentioned to you before we started recording, we've got a family holiday house on the New South Wales Central Coast, and there's not a lot of people around it at certain times of the year. Other times of the year, it's an absolute madhouse because of where it is. But whenever I go down there, particularly in winter, when it's fairly secluded, I always get a business idea, and I always get ideas about programs I can deliver, people I might want to work with, or how I might want to do it. And I just find getting out of the day-to-day is great for sparking ideas. And if you can't, unfortunately, you can't go on holidays all the time. So the other thing I do is I go for a walk. I try to go for a walk every day, and at least half of those times I don't have anything plugged into my head. So I'm not listening to music. I'm not listening to a podcast. I'm just, you know, listening to the nature and the world and the traffic around me. And I find that stimulates ideas as well, getting away from my office and away from my laptop and away from my desk.
Yeah, that's. I think that's a really good idea all round. I mean, the holiday's great, but the just going out for an hour or maybe even half an hour to get away from all the stuff that's going on and completely unplug and kind of take in some totally different inputs. For me, often that's when I go out on the bike, because that's when I don't put on headphones and listen to podcasts or music. And if I'm on my own, in particular, when I don't have somebody talking to me either, then I'm paying attention to the sounds of nature. And yeah, that's when I get lots of ideas.
Yeah, great.
Do you have a favourite resource that you use a lot?
Oh, I've thought about this. My phone.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a resource. No, not really. I try different things, and there's nothing that I've really stuck with. I guess, you know, I'm a big write things on paper, and I'm a list maker, but it needs to be on a piece of paper that I can see. I guess in terms of for research and to find out what's happening, then I also subscribe to Harvard Business Review, and that's been a really good investment for the last few years, because it's just given me some cutting edge thinking and research that's helped inform my thoughts and my thought leadership and helped me more fully explore some of my ideas.
Okay. All right. Well, there's a few great things there. I mean, the phone, we've bagged the phone a little bit today, but I think, you know, the using it as a tool, I think, is amazing, because I have mine with me all the time, and I can listen to podcasts on it. I can write stuff down. I can record ideas. I can take photographs and have a visual record of whatever it is I decide to take a record of. I can record videos and send video messages to people, and I can actually phone them up, which is quite amazing. A lot of people forget that you can actually do that with those devices.
Exactly.
And you can turn off the notification so they don't have to rule your world.
Mm. So, and I think the thing I love the most about my phone is that I travel a lot and I can run my business from anywhere in the world without really even thinking about it. And I guess the other thing I love is the internet. The guys that came up with the internet, I just bow down to them every day because that also allows me to, you know, have lots of holidays or travel a lot. And I do travel a lot for my business, but it allows me to travel more for pleasure as well, knowing that I can do the work from wherever I might be when I need to.
Hmm. That's right. Yeah, I was just going to say the internet is really crucial with working from wherever, and it's quite amazing. We can work from home or we can work from the other side of the world. I remember the last year and 2 years before that, I ran a webinar for a local business festival from the other side of the world because I was actually on holiday at the time.
Wow.
But I did want to get involved in that festival. Now, it was quite unique because most of the events were local, but I'd set a precedent a few years earlier and said I'll do one webinar as well as some local events. Webinar allows people to kind of join in on their timeline in some ways because it will be a recording available, but I did a couple of live ones from the other side of the world.
Yeah, fantastic. I love that.
Mm. Mm. All right. Now, what's the best way to keep a client on track?
Oh, I'm a planner, so have a strategy and a plan, but then talk to them. You know, put some time in your diary every, you know, day, week, month, whatever your project plan is, to have a conversation with them or to just send them a text message and say, hey, how are you going? I'm here if you need help. This is what we're up to this week. How are you feeling about it? You know, conversations. Nothing beats a conversation when it comes to keeping a project on track. Don't rely on email.
Communication. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Communication.
But don't rely on email.
We've been talking about.
Have a conversation, particularly if things are slipping or if your emails are being ignored, which is quite often the case in projects. Talk to people.
Hmm. Yeah, great advice. All right, and what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Be themselves. There's really nothing else. Just be the same person you are at home as at work and show your personality and don't be afraid of being real.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's almost a no-brainer, and yet people are a little bit afraid of letting their guard down at some point.
I met someone the other day at an event who said, I leave my home life at the door when I walk into the office. And I looked at her and said, how do you do that? And she said, I just cut off. And I went, well, I'm guessing you're not the most enjoyable person to be around. And I'm guessing you don't have overly strong relationships with your colleagues because they're only seeing a very small part of you. And she said, I'd never thought about it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good challenge.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Mel. This has been really great. Now, where can people reach out to find more about you and to even say thank you and get in touch if they'd like to?
Oh, thank you. My website is melkettle.com. The joys of having a fairly uncommon name is that when you Google my name, you'll find me on the first 4 or 5 pages of Google. So I'm on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter. I don't do a lot on Instagram and I don't do a lot on Facebook, but I love LinkedIn and I do love Twitter. You're also welcome to email me, mel@melkettle.com. And I'm always happy to have a chat about communicating, connecting, engaging.
Great. So we'll include all of those links in the show notes. Now, what's the number one piece of advice you'd like to leave the listener, in particular in relation to being a leader in innovation and in productivity?
So you need to know there's two things. You need to know who do you want to influence with your leadership and where do they hang out? So work out who it is that you're wanting to either do business with or influence their thoughts and thinking and ideas, and then understand where they are on social media or elsewhere and go there. So if they're on LinkedIn, then go there and, you know, share valuable information that will help people understand what your expertise is.
There's 4 bits of great advice there, actually. I love the focusing on who it is you're actually serving or influencing, find out where they hang out, and then sharing the valuable information that will help them and also establish your expertise. So great. All right, finally then, Mel, who would you like me to chat with on a future Innova Buzz podcast and why?
I think you should definitely talk to my friend Kate Gilling. Kate is the co-founder of a company in Auckland called Blacksmith, and they work with CEOs and leadership teams to create better humans. And I interviewed her on my podcast recently, and we could have talked for hours. She has so much to say, and she's so interesting, and she's making such a big difference in New Zealand. It's just really inspiring and beautiful to watch.
Fabulous. Well, we'll get an introduction to Kate from you and reach out and get her on the InnovaBuzz podcast.
That sounds great. Thank you.
So thanks so much for sharing your time and your insight so generously today with us, Mel. I've really enjoyed this, and there's lots of great information here around communication with purpose and repurposing communications and being curious and also building the connection with that communication. I think that's a really important one. And for me, that was a highlight today. So I've really enjoyed this, and I wish you all the best for the future, and let's keep in touch.
That sounds fantastic. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your invitation, and I've really enjoyed myself. So thanks.
I hope you enjoyed that insightful and informative conversation with Mel as much as I did and took something away from what she shared. I particularly like her approach to marketing and social media that's focused on communication to connect with the right audience and by providing valuable information. Probably a message you've heard from me over and over on this podcast. I'd love to know what you took away from Mel's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Mel Kettle. That is MelKettle. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Mel Kettle. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Mel there, as well as links to her website, her book, The Social Association, her social media pages, the This Connected Life podcast, and the other resources we spoke about in our conversation. Mel suggested we have a conversation with Kate Billing of Blacksmith HQ on a future InnovaBuzz podcast episode. So Kate, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Mel Kettle. Remember to check out our Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible without giving away your email. Most importantly, it will give you absolute clarity about your ideal client and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. And if you'd like our help to go even deeper into marketing mastery, or help with podcast production, then send me an email to jurgen@innovabiz.co and we'll set up a quick get-to-know-you call just to have a conversation, connect. I'll provide you with some really valuable information and we can find out if we are indeed a good fit for one another. Tune in again next week to the InnovaBuzz podcast. We've got some more fantastic guests lined up, including Sunny Hahn of Atlas Solutions and Sarah Anderson of Visibility Co. Stay connected with us by subscribing to the InnovaBuzz podcast at innovabuzz.com/subscribe. innovabuzz.com/subscribe. Make sure you never miss another episode. It would also mean a lot to me if you leave us a review, because what you think matters. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your ideas, your suggestions, or questions you have, so go ahead and share them in the comments below the blog post for this episode. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.